Thank you. Please be seated. Court is ready to hear arguments for petitioner in Womack versus Redding.
May it please the court. Mr. Jack Gooding will present argument for petitioner. He has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. My name is Jack Gooding. I represent the petitioner, Suzico Womack. I will from time to time refer to her as Susie Womack. She was married to the late Dillard Womack for some 31 years. In 1977, they together purchased a home at 423 Cavite, Wake Village, which is in Bowie County, Texas. And they moved into the home and occupied it as husband and wife. The petitioner is an employee of the U.S. Corps of Engineers, and she was transferred several times over the next 10 years, and for the last 10 years has been stationed in Fort Worth, which has required, of course, to move to Fort Worth as a term of her employment. Her husband, the late Dillard Womack, when he became ill, came under the nursing care, of the respondent, Barbara Redding. And upon Mr. Womack's death, his will provided that he was leaving the bulk of his assets to his nurse, Barbara Redding, including his one-half community property interest in the home at 423 Cavite. The petitioner requested that the Bowie County Probate Court set aside the home as her homestead, that there was never an intent on her part to abandon the homestead. In fact, there was clearly stated intent that she wished to return and occupy the homestead upon her retirement. The probate court denied and stated that instead that there had been an abandonment of the homestead both by the petitioner and her late husband. Now, the rule of law in Texas is quite clear that if either of the two parties, the husband or the wife, had a homestead interest in this house at the time of their death, that right would have vested immediately in the surviving spouse. And the probate court ruled, however, that both of those homestead rights had been abandoned. The court provided in its conclusions of law that the petitioner abandoned her homestead interest on December 15, 1987. And then it stated in its conclusions of law that the only thing that really took place on December 15, 1987 is that she removed most of her furnishings from the house. Not all of her furnishings, but most of her furnishings from the house while she was residing in Fort Worth as a term of her employment. And the probate court went further and stated that the homestead interest of Dillard Womack was abandoned at the onset of his last illness. Now, the Texas court from this court has had a long-standing policy of protection of the Texas homestead laws. I don't think anywhere this is more clearly stated than in a case that was published after I provided my trial brief to this court, which is the matter of Bradley, a Fifth Circuit case, which stated that because homesteads are favorites of the law, we must give a liberal construction to the constitutional and statutory provisions that protect homestead exemptions. And the court provided in Bradley, in footnote, once gained, homestead rights are not easily lost. The only way for property to lose its homestead after it's been dedicated is by death, abandonment, or alienation.
Here we've had four judges look at the evidence and certainly in the record and have concluded that there was in fact abandonment.
We had the probate court who concluded, as you stated, that there was abandonment because she took most of her furnishings from the property.
But they look at all of the record.
At all the record, but the conclusions, laws, and finding of facts are the only way that we can get inside the probate court's mind. And his conclusion was, based upon finding of facts and conclusions of law, that the removing of the property by the petitioner was an abandonment on her part. There's a number of cases by this court and lower courts that states that because of the constitutionality and the protection of the homestead right, that it is not that easy to lose an abandonment. You must have a the satisfaction of a two-pronged test, which is clearly set forth in the Farrington case and the Western Fire case, that it requires two specific elements. First is the cessation of use or the discontinuance of use. We have that here. She was clearly living in Fort Worth at the time. But the second prong is equally as important, that there must be a stated intent to abandon or to never return to the homestead.
And the trial court and the Court of Appeals, three judges of the Court of Appeals, found from the circumstantial evidence in the case, they found that she had, in fact, without so stating verbally, that she intended to abandon the homestead.
Exactly. Let me address them separately. I do have, I respectfully have questions with the Court of Appeals' opinion, and I'll address those. But the only fact and the only circumstantial evidence, and clearly, I think both evidence, both prongs of the two-pronged test can be satisfied by circumstantial evidence. However, the only circumstantial evidence relied upon the court was the moving of the property. And is the moving of the property clear and undeniably clear, as is required by the host of cases, this court and lower case, to prove a stated intent never to return to the property? The trial court concluded by this one circumstantial fact that she removed most of her property. Well, why did she remove most of her property? Two reasons. Number one, she was stationed in Fort Worth as a term of her employment. Number two, she had made an agreement with this nurse that the nurse could live in her house to be closer to where her husband was living to help care for him. And to make it accommodating for her, she removed most of her possessions and placed them in storage there in town. Now, keyword is she moved.
She did not move these furnishings to Fort Worth?
No, she did not. But she left major appliances still at the home. She didn't move the refrigerator, the washer, dryer, and several other major appliances. And the testimony of the court was quite clear. Why didn't you remove these appliances? Because I want them there when I come back. I don't plan on abandoning my interest in the homestead. Three people testified in the probate court. There were three people who testified. There was the petitioner, there was the respondent, and there was the sister of the deceased. The petitioner and the sister of the deceased, who has no self-serving interest, both stated that the petitioner had always said that she planned to return to the home. That she had always openly said, when I can retire from Fort Worth, I'm going to come home, I want to retire and live out the rest of my life here in Texarkana, where my husband and I bought this home at happier times. And indeed, the respondent even testified that the arrangement by which she could occupy the house was conditioned for as long as she cared for Dillard Womack, which obviously by implication means that when that need no longer existed, she knew that she was moving out and that the possibility that the petitioner would come back. Let's go back and try to answer your question more fully. Court of Appeals in Texarkana, having heard our oral arguments, also stated that they believe that an abandonment took place and affirmed the trial court. First of all, the Court of Appeals was, first off, in the ruling, they had an incorrect statement of material fact. On page 2 of their opinion, they stated in the second paragraph that the petitioner has moved to Fort Worth and has resided ever since she's been in Fort Worth in a rented residence. And yet on page 4 and 5 they state that she bought a house in Fort Worth and the whole time she's been in Fort Worth she's been living in a house that she owns. There was never any evidence ever presented to the court that the petitioner bought a house. And indeed the petitioner had never bought a house in Fort Worth.
There what happened to the $30,000? Does the record reflect what happened to the $30,000?
The testimony was that while she was in Fort Worth, she wasn't happy with rental arrangements, and she talked to her husband, who was in Texarkana, and said, what if I decide to buy a house? And he said, well, we have $30,000 in a joint account. Take the $30,000, see if you can find a house you like. But the house was never bought. The house was subsequently loaned to a friend who paid it back to her within a one-year period of time.
But the house was loaned to a friend.
Excuse me?
You said a house
was loaned to a friend. The $30,000 was loaned to a friend. But the house was never purchased. And in fact, there are several cases of this court which clarified that even if you purchase a house, if you still don't have a stated intent to abandon the homestead, that is not a satisfaction of the second prong of the abandonment test.
After she moved Fort Worth, did she ever return to Texarkana and stay even overnight in that house?
Yes, sir. The evidence was that she would return on weekends and to be closer to her husband. And when she did return on the weekends, she stayed at the house. At one point, she was transferred to New Jersey, and they sent her back here to Texarkana. There's an Army Depot station there in Texarkana. And when she was doing her training as part of her job requirement, she stayed in her house under that circumstance as well. So in many cases, she came back and lived in the house. That is correct. But the first, I'm sorry.
Any other questions at this time?
I would like to complete my answer to Judge Gonzalez. That I had two problems with the Court of Appeals. First was that they misstated the facts. And they also, within their own opinion, stated it both ways, that it was rented, but that she bought a house, and she never bought a house. There was no testimony of that she bought a house. But secondly, the Court of Appeals erred by applying the sufficient evidence test, which is not applicable in this case because of the constitutional nature of the protection of the homestead.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court. Mr. Raymond Anderson will present argument for respondent.
Please the court and Mr. Gooding. I do represent Mrs. Redden, and this appeal before this court, I would point out to the court that on points of error, that the points one and two are based on incorrect decision of the Court of Appeal, not on insufficiency of law or any other thing. Jurisdiction was based upon that there was not law to support what the Court of Appeals did. So I think the court should give some attention to the fact that...
Isn't the law that evidence of abandonment has to be clear and unequivocal? Isn't that longstanding law regarding homestead?
I think that is true, yes, sir.
How is this clear and unequivocal?
Okay. Of course, as the Court of Appeals applied, at least what their questioning was when we appeared before the Court of Appeals, they questioned whether or not actions or words is what you can rely on. They took the position that a person's actions can be as clear and can override what a person's words might be.
Is the opposing counsel misstated any of the facts involved here?
He has omitted some of them.
Which ones he has omitted that make this clear and unequivocal? Because he has stated is equivocates in the other direction, and I think he stated the law correctly that the legal presumptions under Texas law are against abandonment because homestead is constitutionally protected.
Yes.
So it has to be very clear and very strong and very unequivocal. What is it?
I would point out to the court this, that the courts have seemingly taken a departure from some of that in certain cases, such as where there is an estrangement between spouses. Many of the cases, when you read them, you're going to find that, as I did, that this is it contemplated a happy marriage situation. This is not true in this case. There are cases I have cited to the court. The Linnaeus case that I cited, and there is another case that deals with where there's an estrangement between spouses. Now, you have to remember in this case that the parties were not living together for a long period of time before Mr. Womack's death.
How long was he ill?
He actually had emphysema, and he moved in with his sister about 10 years before his death. and it became progressively worse the last two or three.
This is mainly during the time that she was absent. He was ill virtually all
that's
the time
correct.
That she was traveling.
And even when she was back in Texarkana living in a home, he was living with his sister. And he had added a room onto his sister's residence. The brother-in-law had died about 10 years before Mr. Womack died. And following that, almost immediately following that, he added a room onto her house and became a permanent resident in his sister's residence. He did go back to the house. The record did show that he went back to his own home occasionally, but never to live, never to spend the night, never to do anything other than just see it was cared for. And so as his emphysema became progressively worse the last two or three years, he was in bad shape to the point the record shows that Mrs. Redden and her sister Amy Wagamon were the two who provided for his care, like bathing him and doing all the things that go into taking care of a person who is gravely ill. Suzika Wama did not even contact him during his last days of his life. He did file a divorce against her in April of the year before he died.
That addresses the marital relationship and perhaps some estrangement in the marriage. That doesn't address the legal homestead interest.
Well, you
can live in Alaska for 30 years and maintain a homestead in Texas.
The question, you see, there again, there is an issue as to whether or not she could tack on to his homestead if he did have a homestead, or was she could tack on to her own. The question that you have to evaluate both of those situations: his homestead, did he have a homestead there? Did she have a homestead there? Now the trial court found that when she took out the $30,000 for the purpose, or at least she told her husband she's going to buy a house in Fort Worth, she said she went looking for a house but didn't find one. Soon thereafter, not very long thereafter, but soon thereafter, she turned around and loaned that $30,000 to a David Ward, and on an unsecured, just loaned it to him, no obligation at all.
How is that relevant?
Well, he took that and bought a house, and she moved in with him after he bought the house. And she lived with him.
Did he pay her the money back?
Good pardon?
Did he pay her the money back?
The testimony was he paid her the money back. But she did continue to live with him in his house in Fort Worth with money that had she had helped him buy. Now, of course, I understand that in today's morality, that is not as pretty common to do those kind of things. But still, I'm saying that when you read the cases are making some distinction between people who are harmonious in their relationship as protecting the homestead.
You're saying it's the clear and unequivocal standard no longer applies when there's an estrangement in a marriage relationship?
I'm saying the courts have made a distinction, yes, sir.
That it can be equivocal?
The courts
doesn't have to be any unqualified pronouncement on the part, either by word or by deed, of one of the parties that they are abandoning, that they don't intend to pursue, that doesn't have to be that?
The cases have dealt with this estrangement have not dealt with this question of unequivocal. As I read them, they have not dealt with that question. It has not come up. And so I don't know whether or not they're applying those standards. All I know is they know in the rulings, they have made a distinction. And they have, when a person has, for example, a man after a separation, in the Linnaeus case, bought property, they said she can't come in and claim homestead in his property he acquired after the separation. Now, where that's clear and equivocal, that is not where she lived in it and then went off too. But it did make a distinction between, because normally in those cases, say that she would be able to come in and tack on to his homestead rights in property, but they did not let her do that.
Mr. Anderson, I'm sorry. Let me start over. The parties were married. They acquired the home. Wife works, leaves the property. Let's just assume she abandons the property. There is no divorce. Husband dies. Are you saying in those circumstances the wife has no interest in the house?
Absolutely, she has her community interest. There's no question about that. The only question is whether or not she has a right to a homestead right based on his, if he has a homestead right. Of course, I understand the law to be that if he had a homestead right, she would have a homestead right. Same way, if she had a homestead right, she could continue her homestead right.
Now, did he abandon that homestead right when he added on to his sister's house and moved over with her?
Well, the court didn't find that, but certainly that was some indication, yes. I think it was a strong indication that when he added spent, I think, I'm not sure what's in the record or not, but I think it was about $14,000, $15,000 he spent adding on to that room, and certainly, at least it was a major expense. And
well, did he move his things out?
He moved his bedroom furniture and things out, yes. He did not move the other furniture because his sister had all the other furnishings that were needed. Another thing I'd like to point out to the court is that the homestead claim made by Mrs. Womack was not made promptly in the probate proceedings. It was about 2 years after Mr. Womack died and the will was probated that she ever made a claim. She waited 2 years to say, yes, this is my homestead. Normally, I think that a person, if they intended to occupy it and wanted to claim his homestead, I haven't seen the lights.
It's not quite that.
All right. She would have come in and claimed earlier, but she did not do so. Another factor that the courts have looked at is the treatment of one spouse or the other. And as we have indicated, that she did not contribute to his care. Mrs. Walgama testified that she and Ms. Redden are the ones who cared for Mr. Womack, and that...
I'm still not sure how that's relevant to her homestead interest in that house.
Well, it would be as to whether she could tack on to him, I think. But
why would she need to tack on to him?
She wouldn't if she had her own homestead.
She moved out and moved to Fort Worth and bought a house in Fort Worth and had rented this property to Ms. Redden. She could still claim it as homestead. She could still preserve it as homestead. The fact that she allowed Ms. Redden to live there while she cared for her husband, regardless of her relationship with her husband, doesn't affect her homestead interest, does it?
No. But let me say this, though, that she did, again, she moved all of her things, essentially all of her things out of it.
She did not move them to Fort Worth, did she?
Well, now, let me say the record is, I don't know of anything in the record that says where she moved them to. Now, Mr. Gooding has said she left in Texarkana, but I think when we search the records, that I don't think
she moved some furnishings into a storeroom, but left her major appliances in the home.
Yes, she had previously bought furnishings in and had them in Fort Worth. That was the testimony. But her declared intent. Let me point this one thing out also, that there are case lines of cases that you need something definite about returning. If you move from a home, that you cannot have sometime I'm going to return. There has to be some, it has to be, if you have a condition onto the return, then the courts have disregarded that as a declared intent to return. Now, she has said, and the record will show, that she says, when I retire, I'm going to return. We don't know if and when she will ever retire. There is a case, it was cited in my brief, but if you want to make a note of it, Harston versus Langston, 292 Southwestern 648, says that that when you have a condition on it, it is the same as not having a present intent. Also, there is a case that is cited by Mr. Gooding in his brief, the Farrington case, likewise says that. We have a condition added on to, I'm going to do this and so, and then I'll return. That is the same as not having an intent to return. So I think, again, you have to decide whether or not those words she speaks have credibility based on her actions. and also whether the conditions apply to it or not, and would overrule her present, any present intent to return.
I mean, if I buy a home, or I buy a place at Lake Buchanan, and I spend every weekend up there, every spare moment that I can up there, and I rent a house here in Austin, and that's my home, as far as I'm concerned. I have lived here because this is where I work. But I declare that as homestead. And that I retire from the court and get a job in New York City, but I still got my place in Lake Buchanan, that's still home. I go live in New York City for a term of years. And for one reason or another, my spouse stays here, stays in Austin or stays at the place in Lake Buchanan. I've never denounced my homestead interest in that place. I've established a homestead there. But if something happens to my spouse, I can't, and she leaves that to someone else in her will, or her interest to someone else in her will, and probate, I'd come in and claim a community interest, but I can't claim a homestead interest.
No, I think your facts that you've stated are entirely different than the facts we've stated.
No, it's a question of, you know, I intend to come back, whether I've got all my furniture, or some of my furniture, or some of my appliances, or pictures on the wall in there or not. I may even, or she may rent it out. I don't use it as often as I did, but it's still my homestead, still where I plan to come back to. That's not my homestead anymore.
Well, no. I'd say this, that your facts are different in that someone else has not been occupying your house, as you stated it. In this case, someone else has been occupying it. You did not say earlier that you had moved everything out, which in this case, she had moved other things out. So I think the facts are distinguishable between what you have suggested than what actually happened in this particular case, and I think we
have to say I took everything but the major appliances to furnish an apartment in New York City.
Again,
but, you know, if it's someone else is staying there by my with permission, maybe paying rent, maybe not paying rent. I am not using it at that moment, so fine. I let a friend move in like a fish and stay there. And say, hey, you know, you fish in it until I'm ready to come back.
I think, yes, I think that if your facts are substantially different. She was working in Fort Worth. She looked for a house in Fort Worth to live there as a permanent thing. She rented residences. She moved in with another man. All those things are substantially different than what you have proposed as your view of facts. And that's what I'm saying is that we want to be fair, but what you have suggested is, I think, is the question is whether or not she did some actions that would warrant the court in concluding that she, in fact, abandoned the homestead.
But isn't there a constitutional presumption against abandonment? Isn't there a constitutional presumption in favor of the homestead, and doesn't the evidence of abandonment have to be clear and unequivocal? It can't be foggy circumstances, perhaps, maybe, well, probably. It has to be clear and unequivocal. It has to be certain.
I think that, yes, I think that as far as her interest is concerned, it would have to be clear and unequivocal. I do think that her actions make it clear and unequivocal that she was making Fort Worth her home and she does not intend to return to Texas. Now, that is, you know, it's up for a decision, but the trial courts concluded, yes, she did not intend to return to Texarkana. The Court of Appeals concluded, yes, she did not intend to return to Texarkana. Now, this court may feel differently, but I'm saying that the others have concluded, based on the actions she had, not on her words, but on her actions, that she did not intend to make that her home again. Plus the fact that she, as I said earlier, waited 2 years after his death to make any claim to homestead. Now, that is makes something suspect to me.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
May it please the court. I'd like to initially respond to several statements made by Mr. Anderson. The first of which is that he made the statement that the petitioner moved into the house purchased by David Ward. David Ward was the individual to which she loaned $30,000 and he later paid her back within a one-year period of time. That's the first I've heard of that. It's my understanding that she was renting an apartment or a residence the entire time she was in Fort Worth. It's the first I've heard that she moved into his house.
Was this in the record one way or another?
Excuse me?
Was this discussed in the record one way or another?
It's discussed in the record that following Dillard Womack's death, that she moved in with Dave Ward. And that is clear. As to whether he bought a house, that to my knowledge, is never discussed in the record. Second statement that he made was that she took $30,000 and began looking for a house to buy as a permanent residence. And that's also the first time that's ever been brought up. The truth of the matter is, her testimonial evidence as to her purchasing house went like this. She called her husband and said, I'm here, I'm renting an apartment, I'm tired of paying rent. And he says, well, I don't like you paying rent either. Why don't you look to buy a house? It'd be a nice investment. And then when they transfer you back here or when you're retired, we'll sell it or we'll rent it. And we'll use it as an investment device. And that was her testimonial evidence. And that was the only evidence that was submitted before this court as to the sole purpose that she was looking for a house. But there was no testimonial evidence that she ever stated that she was looking for a house as a permanent residence. Mr. Anderson also talked about several cases in which he felt that he could glean bits and pieces from the cases that talked about your stated intent to return cannot be conditional. I can't state that I'm going to return conditioned on something happening. Unfortunately, what he's done is he's just shifted the burden of proof of abandonment from the person claiming abandonment to the person claiming the homestead. If I have to prove anything to keep my homestead, then you shifted the burden of proof onto me. The burden of proof in all cases dealing with abandonment of homestead is on the person who is claiming that the abandonment has taken place. And that's clear and understood. Obviously, petitioner was not required to make any proven statement of intent unless they could prove by some evidence, some circumstantial or some testimonial evidence, that there was evidence that she did intend to abandon her homestead. I rely once again upon the conclusions of law and finding of facts of the probate judge. And his finding of facts were that on December 15th, she moved most of her possessions from the house. And then in his conclusions of law, he stated on December 15th, on that day, and not before and not after, on that day, December 15th, she abandoned her homestead. And yet the only thing she did on that day was remove her furniture. I'd like to address in a little bit more detail the opinion of the Court of Appeals of Texarkana, which seemed to predominantly concentrate on the sufficiency of evidence test, and kept referring to the trial court's ability as a trier of fact to shift through the evidence and to give weight and credibility to the testimony or the other circumstances of evidence that it found persuasive and to disregard and to ignore other evidence. Although that is a correct statement of law in most cases, due to the strong protection of the homestead right, that evidence to establish abandonment is not whatever evidence the trial court can find. It's not finding something to hang our hat on. Instead, the proof of intent to abandon must be undeniably clear, according to West versus Austin National Bank.
Doesn't the trial court still have the power to decide who is credible and who is not?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
If he decided that her position was inherently incredible in this case, that would support his finding of abandonment, would it not?
Is the proof?
Would it not?
No, I disagree. We have a two-pronged test. And the only question that I was asked by the Court of Appeals in Texarkana was, well, yes, we have a two-pronged test, but can't I infer the second prong from the first prong? If you move from the property, discontinue its use, can't I assume that you intended never to return? Isn't that a strong presumption? And my response was no. Then you have a one-pronged test. Then you could always say, well, if we can infer the second prong from the first prong, then we only have one step. And the law is quite clear, and it's the precedent by which we advise our clients and apply our case law, that there's a two-step and they must be satisfied. Discontinuance of use and state an intent to permanently abandon the homestead. And that it was not satisfied in the Court of Appeals decision.
You say stated intent. You can show intent from conduct rather than direct evidence.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Intent can be shown, and I do not disagree with you that the prior fact has the ability to determine the weight of sufficient evidence. Nevertheless, it must do so under the standards of its burden as set forth in the presence of this court and lower courts.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in the second cause. The court will take another brief recess.
Y'all please rise.